Chapter 7. The Storm on the Lake. Intense excitement instantly took hold of the crowd. Relieved, people cheered again and again, shook hands with one another, and threw their caps into the air. Everyone was delighted, for everyone liked Tell and Walter, and it pleased them to see the governor disappointed. He had gotten his own way for so long that it was a pleasant change to see him lose in this manner. Not since Switzerland became a nation had the field outside the city gates been the scene of such a celebration. Walter had picked up the apple with the arrow stuck in it and was showing it proudly to all his friends.
"I told you so," he kept saying. "I knew Father wouldn't hurt me. Father's the best shot in all Switzerland."
"That was indeed a shot," exclaimed Ulrich the blacksmith. "It will be remembered for a long time to come. For as long as the mountains stand, the tale of Tell and his crossbow will be told."
Rudolf der Harras took the apple from Walter and showed it to Gessler, who had been sitting in shock on his horse.
"See," he said, "the arrow has passed through the very center. It was a master shot."
"It was very nearly a master Walter shot," said Rosselmann the priest severely, looking at the governor sternly.
Gessler did not answer. He sat looking moodily at Tell, who had dropped his crossbow and was standing motionless, still gazing in the direction in which the arrow had sped. Nobody wanted to be the first to speak to him.
"Well," said Rudolf der Harras, breaking an awkward silence, "I suppose it's all over now? We may as well move on, eh?"
Der Harras bit a large piece out of the apple, which he still held. Walter uttered a loud shout as he saw the mouthful disappear. Up till now, he had shown no signs of emotion, in spite of the danger which he had had to face. But when he watched Rudolf eating the apple, which he naturally looked upon as his own property, he could not keep quiet any longer. Rudolf gave him the apple and apologized, and the boy began to eat it happily.
"Come with me to your mother, my boy," said Rosselmann.
Walter paid him no attention and went on eating the apple. Tell came to himself with a start, looked around for Walter, and began to lead him away in the direction of his home, ignoring all the cheering that was going on around him. Gessler leaned forward on his horse.
"Tell," he said, "I want to have a word with you."
Tell came back.
"Your Excellency?"
"Before you go, I want you to explain one thing."
"I would explain 1,000, Your Excellency."
"No, only one. When you were getting ready to shoot at the apple, you placed an arrow in the string and a second arrow in your belt."
"A second arrow?"
Tell pretended to be astonished, but his acting did not fool the governor.
"Yes, a second arrow. Why was that? What did you intend to do with that arrow, Tell?"
Tell looked down nervously and twisted his bow with his hands.
"My lord," he said at last, "it is a shooter's custom. All of us place a second arrow in our belts."
"No, Tell," said Gessler, "I cannot take that answer as the truth. I know there was some other reason for what you did. Tell me the reason honestly. Why was it? Your life is not in danger, whatever it was, so speak up. Why did you take out that second arrow?"
Tell stopped toying with his bow and met the governor's eye with a steady gaze. "Since you promise me my life, Your Excellency," he replied, drawing himself up, "I will tell you." He drew the arrow from his belt and held it up. The crowd pressed forward, hanging on to his words. "If my first arrow," said Tell slowly, "had struck my child and not the apple, this arrow would have struck you, my lord. Had I missed with my first shot, be sure, my lord, that my second would have found its mark." A murmur of approval broke from the crowd as Tell thrust the arrow back into the quiver and faced the governor with folded arms and burning eyes. Gessler turned white with fury.
"Arrest that man!" he shouted. "My lord, please reconsider," whispered Rudolf der Harras. "You promised him his life. Tell, run," he cried.
Tell did not move.
"Grab that man and bind him," shouted Gessler once more. "If he resists, cut him down."
"I shall not resist," said Tell in disgust. "I should have known that it was crazy to trust a tyrant to keep his word. My death will at least show my fellow citizens what their governor's promises are worth."
"No," replied Gessler. "No man shall say I ever broke my word. I promised you your life, and I will give you your life. But you are a dangerous man, Tell, and I must guard myself against you. You have told me that you intended to murder me. I must be certain that that intention is not fulfilled. Life I promised you, and life I will give you. But of freedom I said nothing. In my castle at Kuznacht, there are dungeons where there is never any sight of the sun or the moon. Chained hand and foot in one of these, you will be unable to aim your arrows at me. It is unintelligent, Tell, to threaten those who have power over you.
Soldiers, bind him and lead him to my ship. I will follow, and I myself will bring him to Kuznacht."
The soldiers tied Tell's hands. He offered no resistance, and he was led away to the shore of the lake where Gessler's ship was anchored.
"Our last chance is gone," said the people to one another. "Where shall we look now for a leader?"
The castle of Kuznacht lay on the opposite side of the lake, a mighty mass of stone located on a massive cliff rising straight up from the waves, which boiled and foamed about at its base. Rocks of fantastic shapes surrounded the cliffs, and these rocks had sunk many ships that were pushed against them by the frequent storms that swept over the lake. Gessler and his men, with Tell among them, bound and unarmed, got on the ship early in the afternoon at Fluelen, which was the name of the harbor where the governor's ship had been anchored. When they arrived at the ship, Tell was placed at the bottom of the hold. It was pitch dark, and rats crawled over his body as he lay there. The ropes were cast off, the sails filled, and the ship made her way across the lake. A large number of the Swiss people had followed Tell to the harbor, and they stood gazing sadly after the ship as it faded into the distance. There had been whispers of an attempted rescue, but nobody had dared to begin it, and the whispers had led to nothing. Few of the people carried weapons, and the soldiers wore armor and carried long spears and sharp swords. As Arnold of Sua would have said if he had been present, what the people needed was to be careful. It was useless to attack men so heavily armed. Therefore, the people looked on and groaned, but did nothing. For some time, the ship sped easily on her way through the calm waters. Tell lay below, listening to the steps of the sailors above as they ran around on the deck, and gave up all hope of ever seeing his home and his friends again. But soon he began to notice that the ship was rolling and pitching more than it had been at first, and it was not long before he realized that a very violent storm had begun. Storms sprung up very suddenly on the lake, which made it dangerous for boats that attempted to cross it. Often, the lake was quite calm at the beginning of the journey, but became rough enough by the end to wreck even the largest ship. Tell welcomed the storm, because he had no wish to live if life meant years of sitting in a dark dungeon of Castle Kuznacht. Dying at sea would be a pleasant end compared with that. He lay at the bottom of the ship, hoping that the next wave would push them against a rock and send them to the bottom of the lake. The ship's movements became worse and worse. Up on the deck, Gessler was standing beside the helmsman, gazing anxiously across the waters at the rocks around the narrow entrance to the bay, a few hundred yards to the east of Castle Kuznacht. This bay was the only spot for miles along the shore where it was possible to land safely. For miles on either side, massive rocks lay along the coast, which would have wrecked the ship in a moment. Gessler, therefore, needed to direct the ship into this bay, but the helmsman told him that he could not be sure that he would be able to find the entrance through the rocks because of the enormous clouds of spray which covered it. A mistake would sink the ship.
"My lord," said the helmsman, I have neither the strength nor the skill to lead us any further. I do not know which way to turn."
"What are we going to do?"
asked Rudolf der Harras, who was standing near. The helmsman hesitated before he spoke, glancing at the governor nervously.
"Tell could lead us through," he said, "if your lordship would give him permission."
Gessler jumped.
"Tell," he muttered, "Tell."
The ship drew nearer to the rocks.
"Bring him here," ordered Gessler.
Two soldiers went down to the hold and released Tell. They told him to rise and come with them. Tell followed them on deck and stood before the governor.
"Tell," said Gessler.
Tell looked at him without speaking.
"Take the wheel, Tell, and lead us through those rocks into the bay beyond, or instant death shall be your destiny."
Without a word, Tell took the helmsman's place, staring keenly into the cloud of foam before him. To the right and to the left he turned the ship, and to the right again, into the very heart of the spray. They were in among the rocks now, but the ship did not strike them. Shaking and pitching, she was guided along until all of a sudden the cloud of spray was behind her, and in front lay the calm waters of the bay. Gessler called the helmsman over.
"Take the wheel again," he said.
He pointed to Tell.
"Bind him,"
he said to the soldiers. The soldiers advanced slowly, for they were not keen on binding the man who had just saved them from destruction. But the governor's orders had to be obeyed. So they came toward Tell, carrying ropes with which to bind him. Tell moved a step back as the ship glided alongside a tall rock. It was a rock like those Tell had often climbed when hunting deer. He acted with the quickness of a hunter. Snatching up the bow and quiver which lay on the deck, he jumped onto the side of the ship and with a mighty leap landed on the rock and was out of reach.
"Shoot! Shoot!"
Gessler screamed at his soldiers. The soldiers hastily fitted arrows to their strings, but they were too late. Tell was ready before them. There was a noise as the shaft rushed through the air, and the next moment Gessler the governor fell dead on the deck with an arrow through the heart. Tell's second arrow had found its target, just as his first had.